All right. Okay, we're gone. Roll it.
Welcome to the Don't Panic Radio Show. I'm Steve Vinson. That's Paul Schultz. And nothing you're about to hear is true.
Yeah, bring me champagne when I'm thirsty. Bring me a roof when I want to get high.
How you doing, man?
I'm doing pretty good. How you doing?
Yeah, I'm good. I'm good.
It seems like I was just here yesterday.
It does feel that way, doesn't it? What music are your kids listening to these days?
These days? Well, Atticus is into superhero soundtrack music and folk music. Aramis is into anything that's any kind of Five Nights at Freddy's or Undertale related. And Arlo was listening to everything. Literally everything.
Literally everything. All 200 million songs.
Yeah. How about you? How about your kids?
Oh, glad you asked. Not that I had an answer ready or anything. So here's what happened.
I didn't have one. So.
Yeah, you did well. So here's what happens. My youngest is... For some reason, she's either on or she's off, meaning she's either loud and talking constantly, making some kind of noise, or she's not making any noise.
Yeah.
Usually when I'm in the car with her, she's not making any noise at all. She just sits there, right?
That's because you're giving her the dad eye in the mirror.
I can't even see her. She sits behind me. So.
Oh, okay.
But I decided, I was like, well, you know. She always listens to my music. I'm just going to hand her the phone and say, here, you pick something, right? So she goes out to YouTube, and for the last probably 2 weeks, every single time, she plays 21 Pilots.
How old is she?
She is 9.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
In fact, last night we had a little 21 Pilots karaoke night. Which she totally thought of and started and organized herself. So she was doing the rap part of the songs and all that stuff. Pretty impressive.
Mm-hmm.
Listening to the lyrics. Now, I would say it's been 6 months to a year since I went off on 21 Pilots. Right. How much I hated 21 Pilots.
It's well documented. It's been on a couple of our shows.
Right. It's that one song, the song that is, my experience of it was part of the lyrics is my name is Blurry Face and I don't care what you think. And I was like, well, these millennials don't care what people think. And then the part about, I wish I could turn back time to when mom sang me to sleep. And now I've grown up and I got to make money and right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, now that I've listened to that song about 36 times, plus their other music, now I'm actually hearing the lyrics.
Mm-hmm.
They're not saying, I don't care what you think. They're saying, I care what you think. And it's supposed to be ironic because there's other lyrics in there that talk about, like, I wish I didn't care so much about what other people think. You know, I wish I could... and then in some of their other songs, they talk about how they would rather just do their own thing, but you know, they got producers and they don't use these words, but this is what I get out of it. They have these producers that are like, well, but if you want to have success, you have to do these certain songs in certain ways. So they're like, in one of the songs, they actually go, there's probably some songs on this album that I don't really like, but we had to do them. because that's what people are doing now. And in this Blurry Face song, this stressed out song, this is the, when I was thinking about talking about this today, I was thinking, is there something in there that's interesting? And I realized there is. And I'm going to compare Generation X to millennials here for a second. And I'm going to sympathize with them a little bit. I know that's not what we do on this show. We make fun of them. But I'm going to go off script a little bit.
Well, I have, go right ahead, because I, go ahead. Sorry, I'm not going to say nothing.
Super fan James is sitting there going, nope, there goes Steve again, not letting Paul talk.
Well, no, all I was going to say was, yeah, we give millennials a hard time, but there are certain things about them that I admire. And I think we've talked about it on the show a couple of times.
Yes. This song, Stressed Out by 21 Pilots,
mm-hmm.
the gist of it is, when I was a kid, I didn't have to worry about anything, right? Mm-hmm. I didn't have bills. I didn't have anything. I just, just played in our tree houses, hung out with my brother, had fun down in the creek. And then, so I went to college, and now everybody's telling me to wake up. I got to make money, right? And mm-hmm. my reaction on the surface a year ago was, of course, everybody knows that, right? But then it occurred to me today, Generation X, us, we've complained that we were told, we were basically told, raised in scarcity. And they said, you got to work for every scrap of food you get. When you get out of school, you got to go to work. There's not any money. You got to work hard for your money.
Right.
You're not worth shit. So you got to grovel to a boss and work mm-hmm. hard to be worth anything, right?
Yep.
And then we get out and we realize working hard doesn't really do it.
Nope.
It's really not about just working hard.
Yeah.
There's not somebody out there waiting to give you something if you just work hard, right?
All the movies lied to us.
All the movies. Well, they did. And all of the entrepreneurial success books lie to us as well. The ones that are like, oh, read Steve Jobs' book or read about Bill Gates, They just worked hard and, yeah, they failed a few times, but they just kept working hard. And as long as you just persevere and keep working hard and believe in yourself, you'll mm-hmm. And none of that's true.
No.
It's just not true, right? So I was thinking about millennials and I thought, well, obviously we've talked about this and this song talks about this.
Mm-hmm.
They were raised to believe that everything's going to be great.
Yeah.
Right. You're great. You're awesome. Have fun, with your childhood. And we Gen Xers are probably, basically we've kind of the Gen Xers have raised the millennials sort of, not exactly some of us, mm-hmm. but I don't know when they were born. They were born like in 90, right? The
yeah.
Millennials.
Yeah, we didn't raise them, but yeah, it's part of the generation.
You and I didn't.
Yeah, yeah.
Our generation, basically.
Yeah.
Right?
Our generation raised them, yeah.
Yeah. So our generation's going, well, I was raised like to believe, you got to work hard. There's never going to be anything. I'm not doing that to my kids. So you're great. You're a good person. You're going to do great. All you got to do is go to college and mm-hmm. you're going to go to college and you're going to do great and things are going to be great. And then they get out and they have all this student debt
mm-hmm.
and they can't just run off to India.
Yeah.
They can't just run off to Europe. They can't just hang out with their friends and do art and make beautiful music.
Right.
They got student loans. They got bills. They got people breathing down their neck saying, hey, it's time for you to make some money,
mm-hmm.
right? So I guess what I'm saying is I sympathize with them.
Yeah.
Because they were kind of sold a bill of goods like we were, a different bill of goods.
Yes.
But still a bill of goods,
Yep.
I guess the song I was talking about is called Lane Boy.
Oh.
L-A-N-E Boy.
Okay.
That's the one where they talk about, he says... they, but I think he's probably talking about the producers,
right?
And
well,
the suits.
I just love
stay in
how
your lane,
I just love how like we said, our generation raised them, and yet we're giving them all kinds of shit. It's like,
yeah,
we did that to them.
Yeah,
we fucked them up the same way that our parents fucked us up, essentially.
Well, they say God made man in his own image.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm not the first to say, actually, man made God. in his image.
Right.
And what that is the they say the greatest joke the devil ever played on the world is convincing people he didn't exist.
Right.
Well, I think the greatest trick God ever played is to create imperfect humans and then over the millennia proceed to make them feel terrible for being imperfect. You know?
Yeah.
Which is what we do. It's what man does, right? We raise kids and they grow up and they're lazy or they're not lazy or they don't handle money well or something that we don't like, and then we ridicule them for it.
Yeah.
Well, we made them.
Well, the thing that gets me is like, and I was in this boat for a long time with these guys, is, you know, millennials, they get a job. They don't like the way they're treated, so they quit. Now, we go, oh, you know, you're a snowflake, you know. Mm-hmm. Oh, you don't, you know, you're not tough. You can't tough it out. Well, no, we were raised wrong.
Yeah.
They were raised now just to go, I don't need to be treated like a subhuman.
Right.
I don't need to be shit on every single day. I'm worth more than that. Yeah. And they'll walk away.
Yeah. Yep.
So I and one day it just like a light came out of my head and then I realized we secretly envy them because we can't be them. Today, I was sitting in a coffee shop today, and there was a couple of, you know, millennials in there, and they were talking about stuff, and I'm listening, kind of like eavesdropping a little bit because I'm a nosy old man, and I was getting envious of them that they lived in the time when they lived when all this stuff is available and we didn't have it, you know.
Porn.
And it just got me to think about, yeah, well, porn for one, yeah. I mean, you can look at that anytime, anywhere, literally. But no, I mean, they just were raised by, you know, they don't want to be treated like shit, so they quit.
Yep.
We, you know, our parents were raised that you just swallowed it, and that's how they raised us, and that's what we did, and continue to do, and we're jealous that they. We'll quit. We secretly envy their fearlessness, I guess, and call them snowflakes.
There is a lot of nuance in what you just said, which is there's a level of grit that I want my kids to have. Mm-hmm. And that is when you should stick it out. And when you shouldn't stick it out, don't stick it out. Have enough grit to walk away from it. The trick is, how do you tell the difference? Right. And not only how do you tell the difference, how do you teach somebody else the difference? You know?
Right.
Because that's the part that I think pisses a lot of people off. But then people aren't smart enough to get the difference. You know, I used to have more faith in humanity, but that's all gone now. After the last couple of weeks, but
yeah, pretty much.
generally, you want to look at a situation and have a set of criteria. Some people call them principles. Mm-hmm. You know, some people call them non-negotiables. It's like, I'll be treated with respect. It will be getting me closer to a goal. Basically you could boil it down to, does it make me money? Does it bring me joy? Will it get me laid? Right. If it doesn't do one of those three,
all
things,
three in one. I mean, that could be just one thing.
True. I mean, you get the money, you could get the other two, right? the, you know, so you go, okay, I can make money elsewhere, well, for example, we talked a lot about this is my trips down to Bloomington. I mean, I have grit. Mm-hmm. I have an unusual capacity for suffering. Now, our Holocaust survival friends will say, you know, you're nothing compared to, but I'm not meaning in a comparison case. I mean, I'm just saying I've got grit. I can stick things through.
Yes.
But I looked at that situation and I said, it's taking joy away. Not only is it not bringing me joy, it's removing joy from my life.
Right.
And the extra money is not worth it. That's what I want to...
Yeah, no, you were miserable.
I was. Those were dark times. I just went and saw my psychiatrist the other day, and he was asking me how I'm doing. I'm like, compared to the last time I saw you, because last time I saw him was a year ago, I said, those were dark times. I said, I was in a bad way. And I couldn't remember. Suddenly, I've gotten really good at, like, not necessarily telling my doctor the truth. And I couldn't remember whether I had what I had told him, because this is... I'm kind of veering off topic, but I think we said everything we needed to say about the millennials.
Yeah.
Respect. But you know, have some grit. Don't walk away from everything just because it gets uncomfortable. But make sure you walk away if it's not making you money, bringing you joy, or getting you late. All right. I think we kind of wrap that one up. Now, on to my doctor.
Yeah. Change the channel, Marge. Yeah.
Record scratch. So, I've been seeing a psychiatrist now for probably 12 years.
Mm-hmm.
This latest one, I've been seeing him about 8 years, I think. But you know, the reason I go is so I can get my prescription renewed. He won't renew it without me going in. I thought I could get to a point where I just call in and say, "Hey, it ran out," and he would. You know, what I started doing was, I don't want to go, because you tell them one thing and then they ask a million more questions.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And then next thing you know, I'm like, I didn't want to be here for an hour. I didn't want to have to get into all this. I just need my prescription. Right. No warning flags there.
Right? No, I wasn't going to say anything.
Perfectly normal, perfectly healthy. So
you're like Leslie Nielsen. Pretty good. Nothing there. To see here. Go back to your homes.
Perfectly normal, perfectly healthy. Figure out the least amount of stuff you could say to your doctor to continue getting your medication.
Right.
I was doing some of that. So what I couldn't remember as I started getting into how bad off I was the last time he saw me. He's like looking at me funny, and I thought, ooh, I bet his notes say I was doing fine.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, man. he did renew my prescriptions, though.
Oh, well, okay. All right.
Well, and,
as long as you got that taken care of.
Yeah. I got that taken care of. The other thing I got taken care of was we talked on this show about a Radiolab episode. From a while back, and the first time we talked about this, it was we took the Alcoholics Anonymous Are You an Alcoholic test.
Right.
Remember that?
Yep.
And we
passed the flying
figured
colors.
Out that everybody's an alcoholic.
Yes.
Then I believe we've also talked about naltrexone as in a couple of other pharmaceuticals that a guy by the name of Dr. Sinclair has had some success with in Europe.
Mm-hmm.
And naltrexone specifically is a drug that's been approved for treatment of alcohol. What's it called these days? Alcohol use disorder, which is what, you know, it's what we now call alcoholism. Mm-hmm. I can't even say the word. Alcoholism.
Have another drink. It'll clear everything
up. Yeah, that's right. Clear up my speech. Perfectly normal. Perfectly healthy. So naltrexone is approved for use as you know, to treat alcohol use disorder. It's also used to treat opiate addiction.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, that was its first use. What it does is it blocks the opiate receptors.
Mm-hmm.
That cause dopamine to be released.
Hmm.
So, in a nutshell, I'm not a doctor, but I just talked to one the other day. The way addiction works is, and maybe you all know this already, but the way addiction works is you do or take something that causes a release of endorphins, That's like the reward. Endorphins are a good thing because they give you a reward for doing something that is evolutionarily a good thing.
Right.
Like eating fat. You know, if you're on the Serengeti plain and you happen to find some fat and eat a bunch of it, you get that reward and now you go hunt the next thing. Mm-hmm. Right. Having sex releases endorphins.
Mm-hmm.
It's good for procreation, right? So there's a lot of good stuff, right? But then humans discovered artificial ways to get endorphins released. Alcohol being the oldest and one of the first and oldest. Masturbation is right up there with it. Turns out that some people, and it's genetic, mm-hmm. some people have a certain genetic predisposition to being obsessed with that endorphin rush.
Right.
And going back to that thing that gave you that endorphin rush. And so that's what addiction is.
Right.
Not everybody, when we were growing up, the medical community was saying, hey, anybody can get addicted. You can get addicted from one hit of heroin and you can be addicted. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And it can happen to anybody, they're saying. And it's just something that happens. It's not genetic. It's not, and this Radio Live episode was like, oh, yeah, well, you know what one of the most widely used opiates is? Morphine. And you know how many young men between the ages of 18 and 22 were given morphine in the late 60s in Vietnam, right? Well, in World War II, millions of men were given morphine,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
But we didn't have suddenly a morphine addiction epidemic. You know, they got better. They came home. They didn't need the morphine anymore, right?
Mm-hmm.
So the point being, there's a genetic predisposition, and you're not stuck for the rest of your life. There are treatments. Okay. So there's two ways to use naltrexone. One is take it every day and don't drink. Now, what's supposedly supposed to happen is if you do drink, you won't get that rush. And so there's really no reason for you to drink. So the naltrexone sort of takes away the benefit of drinking, right?
Mm-hmm.
If you take it every day. The problem with that, of course, is it blocks endorphins being released for any reason.
Right.
So now I don't really want to, pet the dog, get those endorphins. That doesn't work. Have sex. That doesn't really give me anything. So you're basically taking away all the highs.
Yeah.
Right. So this guy, Dr. Sinclair, said, would it be possible to use naltrexone in a way that you continue drinking, but you take it when you're going to drink, you don't get the rush, and over time, you retrain your brain to say, fine, I can drink alcohol, but after a couple, I don't have that desire for more, right? So you're removing the addiction part of it.
Right.
You just go, I can have a drink, I cannot have a drink. If I'm out at a party and have a couple drinks, then after a couple, then I don't really want any more. You can still get drunk
mm-hmm.
and, do stupid stuff as a result. But so what I decided was I'm going to try the Sinclair method thing. Because in case it's not clear to the listeners, it ought to be by now, clear to the listeners that I enjoy alcohol, as do you.
Mm-hmm.
You enjoy a drink now and then, right?
Mm-hmm.
The issue with me is I do it too much. I do it every night.
Mm-hmm.
And 2-3 times a month, I'm hungover the next day. And that's a problem. So my psychiatrist started asking me, like I had already decided I was going to ask him about naltrexone, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the Sinclair method. But I didn't know how it was going to come up.
Mm-hmm.
When he finally got to how's your sleeping, I was like, okay, before we get into how my sleeping is, it sucks. and he started, like I could tell he had the next question chambered about, what time are you going to bed, exercise, do you eat with it? All those questions when you look up the how can I yes. sleep better thing. But I said, no, I know why I don't sleep well. It's because I'm drinking, right? Oh, I could see him clicking on his computer, right? And it didn't dawn on me until about halfway through that he was giving me the clinical test.
Yeah.
Right? On his computer. Yeah.
That's funny.
I was like, oh, I see what's going on here. Which basically the questions are the same questions you and I went
right
through before.
The completely and, loaded, you know, no-win Kobayashi Maru test.
Yeah. Yeah. Which is what I tell myself and what I, you know, come on. There, of course, if you gave that test to, you know, 100 people, 25 of them are probably going to answer yes to most of those, right?
Yeah.
But maybe 25% of the people have a problem. I don't know.
Right.
So anyway, he prescribed the naltrexone, and he had never heard of the Sinclair method. So he's like, I don't know. He's like, what if you forget to take it and then you have a drink? I don't know. He's like, I really think, you know, here's your prescription. And I really think you ought to take it every day. And I said, am I fooling myself thinking I can drink less instead of quitting? He's like, yeah, I think you are. I was like, well, I guess we'll find out.
Well, you are you are your body's best advocate, so you'll know. I mean, you know this will work. The other, what do you want to be? What, okay? Do you want to be completely numb from taking this thing every day, or do you want to be numb from being drunk every day? He's just swapping one out for the other. You're at least taking the initiative and going, I don't think that'll work, and I know my body, and I know myself. So let's see how this works.
Yeah, yeah, I agree. And the reason I bring it up on the show is not just to talk about myself, but I thought at the earliest stages of this thing, let's see how it goes.
Because
if somebody's listening and they're like, you know, I wish I weren't drinking so much, you know, maybe. You know, maybe this will help somebody.
I think it's a great idea.
Yeah. So I'll keep everybody up to date. I haven't started yet. I'm going to my other doctor tomorrow, my medical doctor, just for, you know, checkup and stuff. I'm going to ask him about it. I already emailed him. He said he's not heard of it, but knowing him, he's probably already looked it up and read about it. I sent him the name of another doctor that actually has on their website that they do the Sinclair method, and so I gave him that link, and he might know the guy. He might call him up and say, well, you know, what's up? But it's, you know, we'll see what happens. But you know, you read a lot of success stories. There have been clinical trials. The reasons people give for it not working, okay? That's one of the ways I kind of judge things is when I do my research. I don't just read the people that say, here's why it works.
Right.
I go and look at the here's why it doesn't work.
Mm-hmm.
And all the reasons I've seen are like, okay, well, those are speculative, right? There's
right.
For example, my psychiatrist was like, well, you know, I would be worried that you would, you know, you'd go out with your buddies after work or something. You wouldn't have your medication. You'd be like, ah, just this once will be fine. And you'll have drinks and you'll get the high, and next thing you know, you're doing it again, you know, twice a week. And the next thing you know, you're back to where you were, right? I'm like, yeah, I could see that. But inside I'm going, I don't know that that is based on science. Oh, that reminds me. Well, first of all, let me finish that thought. I don't know. That's not based on science. That's speculation.
Right.
So the other thing you and I kind of chatted about on Messenger was, you know, he was talking about, he's like, you know what? 70% of my practice is addiction. I have a lot of experience with addiction. And I'm just telling you, based on my experience, abstinence is the best way to, blah, 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 right? It's like, I see a lot of relapses and with people who think they can handle it. And at first I'm going, yeah, that's true. He's got all this experience. And then it hit me. People like me don't go to their psychiatrist to tell them that they want to be treated for a problem. Right. It takes guts, and it takes me doing all that research and deciding on the course of action I want to take. And I'm going to go to my doctor and talk about that course of action. Right.
Mm-hmm.
If I'd never read about the Sinclair method, I'm not going to my psychiatrist and telling him I have a problem. right?
Right.
I'm not going to do that. So people like me don't go do that, right? No. The people that go tell their psychiatrist they have a problem are the ones whose wives just told them they'll leave them if they don't. The ones that just got out of jail for their fourth DUI and they've hit rock bottom. They don't know what else to do.
Mm-hmm.
The ones that the judge ordered them to go see somebody and gave them this guy's name as one of the possibilities. He's seeing a self-selected,
yes,
hardcore group of addicts.
Yes.
Right?
Yep.
So the stuff that he needs to do for them isn't necessarily the stuff that needs to be done for me, which is why I'm looking forward to talking to my doctor tomorrow, because he doesn't have an addiction practice. Mm-hmm. Now, the downside, of course, is he doesn't have experience with addiction, but the plus side is he doesn't have experience with addiction.
You know? Right, right.
So I just want a medical perspective on, does this seem to make sense?
Mm-hmm.
And are there any downsides, any side effects,
right,
of the medication or any interactions with anything else I'm doing, you know?
Right.
So we'll see. And I'll update, you know.
That's cool.
I'll give periodic updates on the show.
Also, abstinence has never worked in the history of abstinence for anything ever.
The more you know.
Oh, should I save that for the end of the show?
Yeah, whichever. In the history of abstinence for anything ever.
Each night I leave the bar room when it's over, not feeling any pain at closing time. But tonight your memory found me much too sober, couldn't drink enough to keep you off my mind. Tonight the bottle let me down and let your memory come around. The one true friend I thought I'd found. Tonight the bottle let me down. Turn to, and lately I've been turning every day. But the wine don't take effect the way it used to, and I'm hurting in an old familiar way. Down and let your memory come around. The one true friend I thought I'd found. Tonight the bottle let me down.
Welcome back to the Don't Panic Radio Show. Thank you for being with us. And, you know, if I made you cry in the first half there, that's okay. Men cry. Women cry more.
That's right.
Hey, speaking of crying, so my latest podcast obsession, which I'm almost done with it, was a long multi-part series on the planes Indians in the Plains Indian Wars.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Crazy Horse, Sitting Bull, George Custer, all that stuff, right? Mm-hmm. And one of the things that fascinates me, and I want to learn more about it, is the Native American people, the nomadic cultures. And I'm not sure if this is true of other nomadic cultures or other what we consider to be primitive cultures throughout the world. But the Native Americans, it had multiple genders.
Right.
Okay. Multiple gender roles, I guess I would say, which is, for example, you could be a biological man with feminine traits, and that was called something. You could be a biological woman with masculine traits, mm-hmm. and that was called something. A biological man with masculine traits, a biological mm-hmm. woman with feminine traits, right? And these people would discover this through vision quests, you know, in a sweat mm-hmm. lodge, and, you know, somehow spiritually, these are considered spiritual designations.
Right.
In a lot of cases. And, you know, a man would dress like a woman and do women chores.
Right.
You know, a woman would dress like a man and go to battle. And nobody treated this woman like a woman. You know, she's a man.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she is a whatever word they had for a biological woman with man, with masculine traits, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the thing, there are two things that fascinated me about it. First of all, I just like the idea of a gay Indian. You know, there's something about that. Because you just don't think of Indians as being gay, right? I also like the idea of a lesbian Indian.
Oh, yeah.
I wonder if they have butch lesbian Indians and lipstick lesbian Indians. Just imagine. Here's the Pocahontas lesbian. They don't call it lipstick lesbian because they don't have lipstick. They're Indians. I mean, come on.
Well, you know what? Well, they take the war paint that they put here and they put it here. So they become like lipstick war paint lesbians. Like, which, by the way, are Beck lyrics.
Yes, that's right. Little known fact about Little Bighorn, it comes out in this podcast, is it was one when one of the lipstick lesbian Indians saw Custer coming over the hill and said, get us some fucking butch lesbians up in here. That didn't roll off the tongue like I thought it would. Butch lesbian Indians. Where was I? And the second thing that makes me happy about that is the primary argument that our conservative brethren have for, you know, marriage being between one man and one woman is mm-hmm. it just ain't natural. You know, it ain't natural. And I'm like, what's more natural than an Indian? Come on.
And, you know, what's funny about that is there's a lot of them out there that, for some reason, these, you know, white middle-aged conservative men are, you know, associating with Native Americans in a lot of ways. You know, like they'll tell you what tribe they're. These are the okay. There's so much. My brain's just racing a mile a minute here. First of all, the same people that tell you should be American will gladly show you how they're from these tribes that the Americans decimated. Okay. The other thing is, these same people will tell you that's not natural. That's not natural. Well, but the people that you claim to be part of thought it was. So yeah. which is it? You know?
Yeah. Right. And are you going to go tell you what? You go tell an Indian that being gay is not natural. You know?
I'm pretty sure you'll get a tomahawk in the face.
Yeah, exactly. Now, if I were them, I'd be better at making the argument. I'd be like, well, who won the war?
Right.
See, our civilization won the war, so it must be better.
Right, because that's how that works.
Exactly. Well, you know, the winner writes the history books.
Mm-hmm.
That having been said, I'm really digging the Crazy Horse, Custer, and all that stuff. And then I thought, I'm learning, once again, it all just pisses me off at our schooling. Because the way we were taught history, it's basically, and I don't think I'm overstating it. I don't mean to be using hyperbole or being one of those guys that's like, they all lied to us. But it really does border on lies, the way that we were taught.
Yep.
Because I probably learned more from TV about Custer's last stand than I learned in school. Yeah. But if they talk about it at all.
You learned more about Custer's last stand from Richard Mulligan and teachers when they hauled him away in a straitjacket than we did in history class.
Yeah. You know, what I remember, whether it was TV or history class, I just remember, this General Custer, was out there and got overconfident. And even though his Indian scouts told him there was an ambush waiting for him, he walked right into this ambush and they killed all of them.
Yeah.
There's like nothing true about that. There was no ambush. Mm-hmm. He did have Indian scouts telling him it was a bad idea to do what he was about to do.
Right.
But he wasn't about to walk into an ambush. He knew where they were. It was him attacking them.
Yeah.
It boggles my mind.
The other thing about, like, being taught history is, I remember falling asleep in history class. Okay? To me, it's the old cliche, I learned more about history when I got out of school than I did while I was in school.
Yeah.
Because, like, I've never fallen asleep researching history on my own.
Oh, right.
Learning the real history. But to learn whatever this version of history was that we were taught was so dull and uninteresting. Maybe it was all part of the big snow job to get us to not be interested in history and figuring it out.
I'll tell you what would have gotten me interested in history instead of a snow job. You imagine? It's like, okay, all the boys are getting blowjobs today. Oh, all right. I'm interested.
But you got my attention. you have to take this pop quiz, and then it's like, I'll pass that fucker with flying colors. I'll just, yeah. I'll be going down C, you know, try my luck. I'm bound to get it eventually if I keep going.
C, A. All right. So I had another thought about 21 Pilots. We talked about them in the first part. So one of their more famous songs and popular is called Heathens. All my friends are heathens, take it slow. You know that one? Wait for them to tell you who they know or something. Yeah. Please don't make any sudden moves. They don't know the half of the abuse. And then it does a bunch of that.
Yeah.
You know the song, right?
Yeah. My oldest was and might still be into 21 Pilots. I can't remember for sure. You know, I don't care for them at all, but I know the songs.
Did she ever dress up as Harley Quinn?
My daughter? No.
Yeah. Okay. I didn't know who Harley Quinn was, and all these kids are dressing like Harley Quinn.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, I don't even know Harley Quinn. And then I looked it up, and I was like, oh, Suicide Squad.
Yeah, right? That's exactly. They're all out dressing like the Harley Quinn from the Suicide Squad, not the actual Harley Quinn. They want to dress like... What parent lets their kid dress like that, honestly? Who lets their 6-year-old go out trick-or-treating dressed like a slut?
Oh. I wasn't. Not us. Certainly not us.
Her original costume is so much cooler. But because of the movie and because, let's face it, You probably haven't seen Suicide Squad. I enjoyed it. Until Wonder Woman came along, it was the best DC movie since Superman the Motion Picture. And then it was quickly forgotten once Wonder Woman came out. But I mean, don't get me wrong, the actress they have playing Harlequin in that movie is she's hot, just flat out. There's no other way to describe it. Therefore, I would not, but the way she's dressed and whatnot, I would never let my kid dress like that. No. I was at a convention one time, and this lady in a wheelchair, she comes up and she's flipping through my sketch cards. And because I believe in striking while the iron's hot, I had 3 or 4 Harlequin sketch cards in my portfolio to sell. And I sold them. But before I sold them, she saw them and she went off. She's like, why are there no Wonder Women around here? Why is everyone a slut? I'm just like, yeah, you're probably right. But hey, I got some Wonder Woman over here. And I quick to make the sale, you know, I turned to the Wonder Woman cards.
Why can't Wonder Woman be dressed like a slut?
Well,
what's wrong with that? She's a strong, empowered woman. She can dress how she wants to dress.
That's right.
Plus, I'd like to see her dress like a slut and then walk in a dangerous part of town and have some douchebag come up and try to rape her.
I want to see what happens to him. Are we writing fan fiction here? What's going on?
Yeah, why not? So here,
I can't, it's not going to end well for the rapist.
That's my point. That's my point. I think it's like a sting operation, only instead of cops arresting the guy, Wonder Woman turns him into primordial ooze. The name of one of my albums is going to be Primordial Ooze. The name of the band is Islamic Kami.
That sounds like a sandwich.
I have one of the Islamic commies with chips. Is that the plate or the platter? Or just the sandwich? my daughter's like, who is Harley Quinn anyway? I was like, oh, well, it's a play on words. Harlequin, you know, like the greeting card company. And she's like, no, I haven't heard of them. I was like, they're like, you know what Hallmark is, right? She said, yeah. I said, well, they're like a competitor. Finally, my wife is like, what are you talking about? I was like, you go to the mall, you go to the Harlequin store, right? She's like, there's no Harlequin store. Harlequin's romance novels. I was like, oh, yeah, that's right. All right, forget everything I said. Listen to your mother. And what I didn't know until this very moment is that there's a Harley Quinn who is not the slutty one from Suicide Squad. I didn't realize that. So she's dressed differently.
It's the same character because they even show it in the movie.
She's a psychiatrist. She's treating the Joker, right? And so I did a little research for the show, and I wanted to know where Harley Quinn came from. So she was this psychiatrist treating the Joker, right? Mm-hmm. While the Joker was in, and the Joker tricked her into thinking he was being cured. And got her to fall in love with him. Am I right?
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah.
That's what happens in Suicide Squad.
You're right on. Yeah.
Is that the correct, according to the lexicon, does that follow the comic version of Miss Quinn?
Yes, pretty much. Yeah.
Does she end up dating the Joker?
Well, by dating, do you mean like they're a couple? Yes. They become a thing.
What other version of dating what might I be talking about?
Dating would imply getting a text message, hey, you want to go out, you know sure, where, okay, but as far as they hook up and they become a couple.
You have an oddly specific view of dating. It's like, hey, I saw you with that girl the other day at the movies, are you guys dating? Well, no, depends on what you mean by dating. Well, I saw you at the movies together, was that a date? Yeah, it was kind of a date. So you're dating. Well, we haven't texted each other to say, hey, what are you doing later? Would you like to go out? I'm sure you had some other meaning that I'm totally missing.
I was going along the lines of the more traditional, you go do stuff for a while, and then you become a couple.
He came to her house, knocked on the door. Dad comes to the door. Yes, is Harley here? Although her name wasn't Harley yet, probably. It may have been.
Harleen is her first name.
Harleen.
Yeah, I know. So, it's kind of weird.
But it's weird. The Joker looks weird in Suicide Squad, doesn't he?
Yeah.
He doesn't look like either Jack Nicholson or Heath Ledger.
Or Cesar Romero or any version of the Joker. He's very
creepy
and weird.
Cesar Romero will always be the Joker to me. He's like the Clayton Moore of the Joker.
He's absolutely the Clayton Moore of the Jokers.
Just like Burgess Meredith is the Adam West of the Penguin.
Oh, I thought we were going to do a Rocky thing.
That was Burgess Meredith, right?
Yep.
Played the Penguin?
Yep.
Okay. All right, so that song, that All My Friends Are Heathens song, that is from Suicide Squad.
Mm-hmm.
And that's 21 Pilots.
Right. Yeah, so you haven't seen it yet. I thought it was a pretty good movie, but I'm in the minority. Of my friends that don't include you, I'm the only one who liked it. But the way I tried to explain it to them is, look what we had before that movie.
Yeah.
So by comparison, it's an enjoyable movie. And then, of course, Wonder Woman comes along and just wrecks everything.
Why can't people just watch a movie and enjoy it or not enjoy it?
It's getting so ridiculous.
I get complaining because I love to complain. And I complained about World War Z. And World War Z was not as good as I thought it could have been. Mm. But it was okay. I mean, it was entertaining. It had some good special effects. It had Brad Pitt, who's knock dead gorgeous, right? But I was disappointed. So I think maybe sometimes people can't separate their, like, well, it didn't follow the book. Yeah. So I'm going to hate it, you know?
Yeah.
But we have some sad news to report. Our good friend of the show, MP Cavalier, has left us. he's had a big influence on my life. He had obviously a huge influence on the show. I'm not sure we would have had the success we've had, which is considerable, you know, if it weren't for MP. I'm going to miss him. I really am.
Mm-hmm.
The quips. I mean, he could get a little serious sometimes, you know, he'd be, you know, all like serious, guilt trippy kind of thing. But in general, I thought he was funny and loves seeing updates about his family, things like that. So yeah, I'm going to miss the guy. I really am. He'll be missed.
Yeah.
But we have Andy. So really, he won't be missed that much. So
Andy Wright had no idea what he was getting himself into.
He didn't.
He's just like, there I was, minding my own business.
We have SFJ. Actually, you know, what we need to do is have MP on the show because now that he has decided to recuse himself from Facebook, we're going to have to force the interactions a little bit more deliberately. Yeah.
Well, he still gets advanced copies of the, you know, of the show, so I assume he still listens.
Let's run a test to see if he still listens. This message goes out to the folks in free America. MP Cavalier, think of something to do and then do it. Repeat. Think of something to do, then do it. That is, I tell you what, if I'd been around during World War II, we could have used that as our code, right? Because nothing is more cryptic than me not knowing what it is I'm saying, right? So I'd be like, I'm going to give instructions to the spies. I have no idea what I'm telling them to do. So how can that? That's impossible to crack.
That's right.
So when I first wrote down that we were going to talk about MP leaving Facebook, it was with the thought that it would come earlier in the show and mm-hmm. we could go on a whole people leaving Facebook thing. But I guess we'll save that for a future show.
Yeah, we could do that next week.
Because it is an interesting thing.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I'll tell you what, though. I'm getting excited for Halloween. It's almost October.
Mm-hmm. It'll be October by the time our listeners hear this episode.
That's true. And I hope it's below 80 degrees.
It is the weirdest thing. I'll be standing out at the bus. I'll take my youngest out to the bus stop. And we're talking 8 o'clock in the morning. And I'm already sweating bullets. And I'm stepping on crunching leaves. I'm like, this is not supposed to be this way.
Yeah, it's weird.
It's like, these leaves aren't supposed to be fried.
Yeah. It will not feel like Halloween. You know, every year I do the, you know, about this time every year, the wind feels a little more crisp and the leaves are crunching underfoot. It's going to be like the leaves are burning in the yard.
And no one's setting them on fire. They're just burning.
Yeah. It's nuts, man. I tell you what, I've never been a believer in global warming. Mm. Or the fact that the Earth is round. But after that eclipse that we had, those hurricanes, this heat,
mm-hmm.
I'm never going to drive again. unless it's a car run that runs on, I don't know, enthusiasm. Nobody's tapped that one.
That's funny.
It's like, come on, kids, we're going to Disney. They're like, we're going to Disney. You pull up to the school. Like, all right, get out. I thought we were going to Disney. No, I just needed some enthusiasm to get the car to run.
You're getting land speed records to get the school by telling kids you're going to Disneyland. It's like, we traveled through time. What the hell?
Then they'll be like, you know what? For 3 weeks, every day, you've said we're going to Disney, and we get excited every day. And every day, we pull up in front of the school. Like, I know. I thought you guys were smarter than that. But as long as it keeps working, I'm going to keep doing it.
Right.
But see you tonight. And when I pick you up, we're going to go to Chuck E. Cheese's. Oh, you're going to go to Chuck E. Cheese's? That'll get me back home.
But getting back to the October thing, though. You know, as our longtime listeners know, we're coming up on, this will be our third annual Halloween special. And... Mm. Already, the response to people who want to contribute to the show is overwhelming. I won't go into specifics because I want to save it for the show, as you and I say on the side. But I mean, we've gotten so many people wanting to contribute in one way or the other that I'm beside myself.
It's great. Love it.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to use as much as we humanly possibly can.
Right.
Or since it's the Halloween special, as inhumanly as we possibly can.
On that note,
go over to iTunes, give us a review, give us a share, give us a rating. We'd love that if you were to do that. We'd also love it if you go to don'tpanicradioshow.com and check that out. We'd love it if you sent us a message. We'd love it if you left a comment and share it on our Facebook page. We just love you.
That's right.
Whatever you decide to do. It's been another good one, my friend.
It certainly has.
For Paul Schultz, I'm Steve Vinson, and nothing just heard was true.
On the bank of the river stood running bare, young Indian brave. On the other side of the river stood his lovely Indian maid.
shit.